Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube.
Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
We are joined. It's that time. King's Roundtable. Brendan Nunes, Frankie Cardicelli. How you doing, fellas?
Great to be here. Looking forward to some Kings-Lakers action. Forward to talking about a smoked 20-point lead. Let's dive into it.
Great. Let's start there. We'll turn the page. We'll turn the page pretty soon here as far as the Lakers tonight, because it's a huge game for both sides, really. But let's first close the chapter on Bulls Kings, and really a lot of the things Chris and I handled yesterday when there was a lot of hate towards Mike Brown and some of the decisions, and we were trying to figure out where the Jimmys and the Joes have to execute and where the coaches lacked some of the decision making. What did you guys think? Did you guys have any problem with anything on the Mike Brown coaching side of it?
I mean, I think there was a stretch in that third quarter. He got put in a tough situation, I will say, rotationally, because Domantas Sabonis gets four fouls pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Same for Keegan Murray. Those two guys are in big foul trouble. That's two of your big three right there. And it's De'Aaron's first game back, and I think he probably missed about three games somewhere in there, right, with that knee bruise. So maybe you don't want to overwork him, but when De'Aaron goes out when he usually does, Domas gets his fourth foul. He ends up taking Domas out the game and runs without either one of them for a good stretch until close to the end of that third quarter, and the Kings give up a bit of a run there. He says they got good shots, but that he did acknowledge that he probably should have gone back to Fox a little earlier, so I get that. And I understand the frustration with Keon not playing over Davion, but I don't know that it makes that much of a difference.
It was 9 minutes. We're talking 9 minutes.
Right, right.
So. And Davion did not play poorly that game. He had, 6 points?
I thought he did okay.
Something like that. He had a bunch of layups. So, yeah, that was the big one. And we all sit next to each other. That lineup was weird. And clearly it was not by design, and he was trying to figure out what to do. But even still, they lost some of that momentum. They went into the fourth up 14, which I know in this era's NBA isn't much, but you're up 14 against the lowly Bulls at home. I don't know if that decision is exactly – if you want to give Mike Brown that, sure. I don't know how big of a piece of the pie it was.
I mean, I look at that last couple of minutes of the third where the Fox and Sabonis minutes happened, and I mean, I don't have the data in front of me, but I would imagine that's happened. Like, if we're looking at like a pie chart, that's probably happened in 2% or less of games this year where both players are available. Like, that's very rare. And the lead dropped from 22 to 14 in that time frame. I don't know if that's the exact window you can look at, which cost him the game. I think it's a lot wider than that. I mean, you go the last 15 minutes of the game, you score 18 points on 30% shooting, or actually 20% shooting if you factor in the last couple of minutes of the third. It just was a complete meltdown all across the board. I mean, in Malik Monk goes scoreless in the second half, De'Aaron Fox a point in the fourth. These are rare things that just – it was a perfect storm of bad. Everything had to go wrong for the Kings, and it did. But we've seen it happen in multiple games this year, which makes it kind of harder to swallow. But a lot went into it outside of just that schematic, that blunder down the stretch.
I definitely feel like, we've talked about it quite a bit, and I think that it's, you're right, Frankie. First off, that's the first thing that I said too, was like hindsight being a bit 20/20 in that moment. Like, it goes bad, and so everybody says points at that moment, and it's like, what are you doing? But Mike Brown never does that. He almost makes a point to go out of his way to make sure one of those guys is always on the floor. And so, you know, it's unfortunate that the one time it seems like he did do it, it kind of bit him in the butt. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, that's not really something that I would be super upset at, because he does it so unfrequently. That's not a word, but the question I want, and it's close enough. I wanted to ask you guys, we were actually just talking about this too. What did you think of the Chris Duarte tech? Did you feel like, because that happens in the third quarter during that same stretch we're talking about, did you feel like that moment had any impact on the game? Or did you feel like, because I know Mike Brown talked about it after, did you kind of feel like that was, again, just kind of hindsight being 20/20? Or in that moment, did you feel like, that might end up shifting things?
I think it was like the moment that things shifted, but I don't know that I necessarily like point it because of the tech. Mm-hmm. You know, that, but that is a moment where I'm like, okay, things started to kind of go downhill, even a little bit beforehand. Yeah. But that one obviously is a little bit more of an identifiable moment. And I get his frustration. There's an angle. Like, he does kind of get an arm to the face after the rebound comes down. He gets bumped by Drummond. Like,
he was tripping.
He was. It was over the top. I will say I kind of like seeing a little bit of passion from the Kings out there.
Interesting.
Because how often does that happen, you know? And not that that's you don't want texts left and right or anything, but I like a little bit of passion that's going
up 19
on
in
and
that
the
moment
physicality.
Too.
So I don't know. I don't hate it, but it definitely was a moment where things started to go downhill afterwards.
Yeah, ultimately, in a situation like that, and, you know, we had people calling in yesterday saying, asking the questions about De'Aaron Fox and having that number one. The bottom line is watching DeRozan and Kobe White do what they did, that is what is going to leave a bad taste in people's mouths. That is not about Mike Brown. Okay, you got to blitz one guy because you don't have the horses to defend because Keegan is in foul trouble. And you're sitting there and you're getting cooked by DeRozan. He all of a sudden, he's Steph Curry. He's making three-pointers now?
DeMarvelous.
Two? He was DeMarvelous. He's making three-pointers. Kobe White, who did not take a shot in the first quarter, he starts cooking. And you got your one guy's in foul trouble in Sabonis. You got your other guy, De'Aaron Fox, who got stuck at 20 points, knowing how important this game is. And then you have Malik Monk, who, as well as he played last game, gives you nothing in the second half. That, to me, right there, your three biggest players and three biggest playmakers, they came up short. Mike Brown can't help you with that. He can't help you with that.
No, like I said, perfect storm for everything going wrong. And by the way, just very jarring to look at. Kobe White and DeMar DeRozan combined for 52 points in the second half. The Sacramento Kings as a team score 53. But one thing I highlighted in my preview this morning was Keegan Murray's been playing pretty good basketball. Like, he's shooting 45% from three over the past eight games. Good start for Keegan. Second half, I think he only took two shots. He took one in the fourth quarter.
This keeps happening.
That keeps happening. And maybe it's because of De'Aaron Fox coming back and the offense is different. There were two games where Keegan played very well and Fox was out. That obviously heightens shot opportunities and volume for other players. But that balance we saw last year with the Kings, again, the same exact roster that we're seeing. The 1 through 7 is the same, or 1 through 8, I guess, is the same. The consistency is not there from these players. I mean, outside of Domantas Sabonis, we're not seeing the same thing where you know what you're getting from each player every given night. You know you're going to get a double-double, a triple-double from Sabonis at this point, who had one of his worst games of the season the other night, mind you. I think he finished, I can't remember what it was from the field, I have it right here. Sabonis finished from the field 7-19. That's just very rare.
He started like 1 of 9.
On it, shots that normally he makes that were good looks that went in and out. And again, the Bulls have the top points in the paint defense for whatever reason. They don't have Rudy Gobert down there. They just pack the paint and they collapse in on people when they're near the basket, I guess. But
still got a double-double, though.
Still got a double-double. Still got his double-double. Yeah,
18 and 21 double-double.
I guess I didn't get to talk to you guys about the your thoughts on the Denver, him coming in at the end of the Denver game. So I'll have to get your thoughts on that again later.
It wasn't great. Not a fan. Wasn't great.
But on your point of the paint defense, you pointed it out actually as where we were coming into the game. Chicago allows least points in the paint. And I think a lot of what it is like Alex Caruso, Kobe White, they play four guards a lot. And those guys dig down a lot and just have really active hands. Caruso specifically is ridiculously good at that, obviously. Maybe one of the best in the league, really. And the Kings kept getting, it was part of the game plan. Like, this means we're going to take a lot of spray threes. Do not get too deep in the paint. And when you get there, play off 2 feet. Don't play off one. Put yourself in a tough decision, a tough spot where you're forced to make a decision. And often they just would get too deep, or you kick out to shooters and guys are hesitant to shoot. I think those were the two big things. Trey. You could think of a Trey Lyles one late in that game. He catches and like takes half a second even. It's not an instant swing. Like all these split second decisions matter a lot. And I think just getting a little too deep, not playing off 2 feet, led to those 17 turnovers. Ugh. And that was part of the game plan that they just did not execute on and not pulling the trigger on threes enough.
Yeah.
Mike Brown's fault.
Right. If the game plan is wrong, or if the game plan wasn't a good one, that's one thing.
Yeah.
If you have a game plan and your team deviates from said game plan, you're just going to throw your hands up. And I had somebody else on my specific tweet when I said, what is it that you guys are asking for? And they said, Oh, well, on that coming out of the timeout when they ended up throwing the ball away, Mike Brown should have saw that De'Aaron didn't have anything and call another one. You're not going to fry your last timeout with, what, 36 seconds left?
I will say Mike said yesterday he was, like, trying to do his own mental count. And, you know, if he felt like that pass wasn't going to be on target or knew that it was going to be tough, that he was going to call it. That he or De'Aaron, like, feel free to call it at that moment, you know?
Yeah, so, and neither of them did.
But the complication with that play is Domas had fouled out, and Harrison Barnes is playing the center role that he has never played really in this out of timeout play. And typically that puts Vucevic on him. And typically the last resort in that play is to lob it over the top to Domas. Mm-hmm. But instead Harrison's there with Vucevic on him. And De'Aaron said after the game, he didn't feel great about making that pass. And obviously what he decided on was kind of this in between, not great thing that he threw up to Malik.
Yeah. Well, when we return, we talk Kings defense, and Brendan Nunes has posted a video on X, and if you are a defensive-minded coach, player, or fan, you should probably hide your eyes. It is not great. We discuss how low the Kings have fallen in their defensive rating post-All-Star break. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Here with the Sacktown Sports Kings Insiders, Frankie Cardicelli and Brendan Nunes. And Brendan just posted something. What was that, like an hour ago, Brendan?
Something like that.
And it's pretty ridiculous. I mean, post-All-Star break, 28th? How many teams are there in the NBA?
30. You know who's horrible, actually, by a decent margin? 7 points worse than the Kings. Dallas Mavericks.
Oof. Wow. Just yikes. A layup line.
And then you get the Washington Wizards, Sacramento Kings, Los Angeles Lakers.
Ooh.
But Kings, 3-3 post-All-Star break, 119.7 defensive rating. That's 28th. On the other end, offensively, they are 8th, 117.6, I think.
Right. So we're back to last year.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we've been back to last year, I feel like.
I guess, yeah.
But, yeah, not great. And it feels like, specifically these last few games, listen, Kevin Huerter's 6'7", and he really tries. Other teams target him. Mm-hmm. And it's happened a lot recently. And I'm sure that if you're a different team and you're, let's watch back these handful of last Kings games right before we play them, they're like, oh, wow, this team was really able to take advantage of Kevin Huerter, you know, and maybe we should try to do that. And, yeah, it's happened a lot these couple games. Harrison Barnes sometimes. I heard you guys talking about Alex Len in that last game against Kobe White. Alex Len was getting destroyed. Mm-hmm. I mean, they try to have him, like, up at the level of the screen. Kobe White's going to go right past you. Yeah. It's just they try a lot of different things. The double teams are just a little too late, and the rotations afterwards take half a second. You have to already know where you're supposed to go and move before it happens instead of being reactionary. And I think there's just like slight timing. They don't have good defenders is pretty much what I'm getting at here.
But that's the weak point.
Like, but it's getting worse.
It's putting everybody else a step behind on their rotations. Like, everyone's a step behind, or more and more cases. Like, you see guys having to break for the corner and close out on a wide-open shooter. And we've seen opposing teams have season highs, or opposing players have career highs or season highs on a nightly basis. So, yeah, it kind of comes back to that point.
Keegan struggled last game, too. And he's the one that you like to feel good about.
Right.
Like, I feel like De'Aaron at some points is picking up DeRozan later in that game. And it's like he's making him work, but there's a size difference. This isn't
going
to work.
When he had already gotten going.
Right. And at that point, it's too late.
Yeah. No, and I was telling Alan the other day, I was watching NBA.com allows you to look at all the clips if you click on the stat. I looked at DeMar DeRozan's 9 of 12 in the second half. A lot of those things are on HB and just kind of getting cooked. Like, I mean, it's a bit like Bam Adebayo the other day against Domantas Sabonis, where it really wasn't anything special they were doing. It was just one-on-one. I'm better than you. I can get to the basket. And it's concerning, man. Like, this team was supposed to, like, that was what was supposed to be different about this year than last year, was it was going to be last year's offense with a new and improved defense. And now we're seeing, not only is the offense not same as it was last year, the defense is also worse. And so as we're heading into this playoff stretch or towards the playoffs, like, what is this team's calling card going to be if it's not going to be, we are an excellent offense on every night? Like, I just, you know, it's tough to, and when you see the inconsistencies that they've had, like, what is the, and this is more of a broad question, I'm not looking for specifics, but, like, what's the hope for the playoffs if you guys can't really figure it out in the regular season?
Prayer.
That's the thing, though. Like, we joke, but, like, I was on with Dave and Jason yesterday, and, like, I heard the same conversation with Katie this morning when she was on with those guys, and everyone is searching for answers right now. And all the things you just laid out and all the questions we are having, I'm sure they're asking those questions internally, too, because how can they go from a team that can score 130 in one night on 50-40, you know, I guess a good night from the line for them is, like, 75%. So we'll say 50-40, 75 shooting, they can turn around and lay an egg the next night or lose their rhythm from three. We don't really know who this team is right now, and we're at the point where they're 60 games in. We're not at that point where it's November, December, right, and we're looking at, okay, it's been 20 games or 30 games. We know who this team is. That's a scary thing, I think, for the Kings and for their opponents, is you really don't know which Kings team you're going to get. The Kings could come out in L.A. tonight and completely beat the brakes off the Lakers, or they could look like they're on the way to it and having a 20-point lead and then lose that game. It's just very, very scary right now for the Kings and their opponents, because you do not know who they are. To me, they're the most unpredictable team in the NBA. You really do not know.
And we might be at the point where that is who they are. Like, that's the identity of the team, is that since they are so offensive-based, that there's so much variance in what you're going to get night to night.
Yeah.
That they are just the inconsistent thing. It's the only thing you can expect at this point.
And I don't think it's just the Kings either. Like, you look at NBA TV, right, or NBA Today right now, it says Dallas Mavericks, does the Dallas Mavericks defensive issues outweigh, which is a funny word, shout out Christopher Lott, outweigh Luka Doncic's brilliance. Like, I think that it's not just the Kings that have issues being so offensively centric, and I think that's why you find this cluster of Suns and Pelicans and Kings and Mavs, because it feels unique to us, but really, it just feels like this is how the league is. It's either you're awesome, you're great, you're able to take care of both sides of the floor, or really, it seems like a lot of teams have kind of followed the Kings model of last year and said, we're going to at least be a really fun offense, and that's going to win us 45 games minimum.
The Suns had a 22-point lead yesterday.
Yeah,
they scored 12 points in the fourth quarter, go to OT against Denver, and they end up winning the game in overtime. But they had a 22-point lead and still had to go to overtime because they scored 12 points in the fourth quarter. The Celtics, clear best team in the league, is up 22. Scores 17 points in the fourth quarter. Let's Max Strus, Dean Wade. We're just going to go D-Wade after that one. And they end up losing that game. Like, this happens so often in today's NBA.
Yeah.
That's not excusable, but it is fairly common.
But the problem is that is happening. But then you also have games where they just don't show up.
Yes.
You can't do all of that.
So I have
a theory. You can't lose in eight different ways.
I think that their high-paced offense and just willingness to shoot really early in the shot clock means that you can come back from games really quick, but you can also blow leads really quick because you're not holding on to the ball for that long.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious, too. Sorry, not to cut. What do you guys think about, just in general, to tie in with the inconsistencies, the fact that the Kings seem to play well against the top four teams, more specifically the top three teams in the West, but then struggle against Chicago. We saw them struggle out the break against the Spurs, and have obviously struggled against some of the worst teams in the NBA. Does that make you overall feel better about the team, or does it just make you more confused and more angry when it comes to trying to figure out, again, just like the true identity of who they are?
My answer is frustrating for, myself and probably for fans as well, but I think it's a good thing because I think it proves that when there's a sense of urgency and when they're really up against it, they play well. Which is why I'm expecting them to play well tonight. I might have egg on my face, but I'm expecting them to play well tonight because this is a very important game that matters in the standings. This is a game where if you lose this game tonight, your lead goes to a half game over the Lakers. You want to put it to 2.5. But against those top four teams, or top three teams, like you said, the urgency is there. They know they have to be up for a team that is, one of the best in the league. And you look at tonight's game, but Chicago, or teams that they've lost to, the Charlottes, the Detroit
Portland.
Pistons, the Portlands, like, they just kind of let their guard down. And I feel like that they have this personality of a team that knows they're good, but they're not that good. They get too comfortable. They get complacent. They get in these big leagues and they kind of take their foot off the gas. They aren't really in a position to do that, especially not now where the West is a total just nightmare and you have six teams trying to get two spots for top six. But they get up for these big games. They get up for teams that are near them in the standings or ahead of them, and that's why I have faith that they're going to be that good team tonight, that good version of the Kings tonight.
The problem is we're getting to the point now where a guy like LeBron is turning it on, and you could have a good game and lose. That's the problem. So when you have somebody down, that's why it's so important to get those wins, because they could play. It could be a great game. It could be a barn burner. They could lose. And it's still going to count the same way as if they got their doors blown off. That's what I'm worried about. I'm not necessarily worried about the Kings not showing up tonight. I'm just worried about the Lakers
not getting the result.
Just not getting the result. The Lakers showing up in a way that they really haven't shown up all season. This is what they're built to do now. They got Anthony Davis, who is, you know, they call him street clothes, things like that. You got LeBron James, who has been in the league since people were babies, and now is when they're going to try to turn it on. Now, they're not going to win a championship, but they could be very annoying towards the end of the season, and I hope that's not the case, especially tonight. But the Kings have put themselves in a very precarious situation. When we return, we continue the conversation with the insiders, Brendan Nunes and Frankie Carticelli. Also, your chance to win Chris Brown tickets here at 1 p.m. And Doug, we see you on the line as well. You have a question or comment for the insiders. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Live and local.
Live and local.
This is Sacktown Sports.
Hanging out with the Sacktown Sports Kings insiders, Frankie Carticelli and Brendan Nunes. And before we get to Doug, let's get to this giveaway. And actually, I'm gonna throw a curveball here with the guys in the booth. Either of you want to pick the number?
Don't pick three.
That was the number I was thinking of. That was the number I was thinking of. So I just say it out loud.
You'll know when. All right, here we go. Live Nation has teamed up with Sacktown Sports for your chance to see Chris Brown at the Golden One Center this summer. All you have to do is hit up the Folsom Lake Honda hotline right now looking for caller number
7.
Caller number 7 to score that pair of tickets. Check out Chris Brown, Chris Breezy at the Golden One Center on July 30th. For more information, visit sacktownsports.com. Caller number 7, caller number 7. 916-339-1140.
I was really hoping you were going to get that wrong. Just, I don't know. Ocho? I don't know.
I can go pretty high.
It would be pretty great.
Can you?
Don't have my mom call in again.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Your mom
that's
calling right. to back you up one time?
That's right. Yeah. Chris Brown, 916-339-1140. 916-339-1140. July 30th, Golden One Center. Thanks to Live Nation. Nate will take care of you. Caller number 7. Let's get to Doug, who wants to be a part of the conversation, always has some great stuff to say. Doug, you're on with Styles and Watkins and the Kings insiders, Brendan Nunes and Frank Carticelli. What do you have for us?
All right, gentlemen. Thank you first for being able to be part of the insiders. What a moment for me.
That's right.
So this is great. So this is what I have. First off, the old adage is, when you have an advantage to win at home, you know, you should go in and do it, and the schedules are stacked up, so somebody's playing on a back-to-back, and they come in. And then right now, when I saw the end of our schedule, I saw how many home games we have, I'm going, oh, this is horrible because we play better on the road. So this is kind of a opposite look. And
oh, no, did we lose you, Doug?
No, I'm still here.
We got you.
In the background.
We got you.
Okay.
All right.
So the other part was I don't like going after people, you know, they can't defend themselves, especially coaches, because coaches are hired to be fired. Mm-hmm. And if I'm Mike Brown, you know, I'm fighting for my job. And there was opportunities against Chicago where you let them go on a run, didn't let us, but that's what occurred in the game. Mm-hmm. And then we don't call that timeout, and we don't stop that momentum, and we don't go in and call a play. Actually, I'd rather like to see him go in and have out-of-bounds plays that he runs, or he gets someone a look. And if that's your pride and your ego and that kind of stuff, then sometimes we can't get out of our own way. And I think that, you know, if he could just swallow his pride a little bit and say, what can I do to give us something that maybe could be implemented on the spot? Because these guys are smart. They're all basketball IQ guys, so they wouldn't be playing. But give them something that they can go in and turn it into a greater chance of scoring. And other than that, man, thank you for having me on, the Insiders. Love your show. You guys do great basketball. You're not homers, and I love that.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thanks for the call, Doug. Yeah, I know when you talk about calling cards, and I know that we've said Mike Brown's calling card, being the defensive coordinator for the Warriors for all those years, was supposed to be defense. Hasn't really been that. Maybe it's based on who the roster is, but certain coaches have calling cards. And in football, we say there's the X's and O's guy and the rah-rah guy. We don't really talk about, at least we haven't talked about it too much in basketball, because basketball is just a little bit different than football. But I know, I remember Coach Kerr, a big thing with Coach Kerr is coming out of a timeout, the play designs that he would have coming out of timeouts or inbound plays would just be nuts. They almost always score, the Warriors do. And I'm not really sure what Coach Mike Brown, we talk about culture, identity, what their identity is right now, besides we're going to chuck it. We're going to run, we're going to chuck.
I mean, pace is a big part of their identity.
Yeah.
That kind of is, you know, a simplified way of
run and chuck.
Kind of what they're looking for, though.
Right.
And I think often he'll say, you know, I didn't want to slow us down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that they could simplify the offense a little bit sometimes, go to more half court, just run empty side, but by themselves, Domas and De'Aaron pick and roll,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just kind of simplify it a little bit more often. It's not that never happens, but I think it could happen a bit more often here. And, you know, I will say, I think out of bounds plays, Mike probably draws up some of them, Mike Brown, but I think mm-hmm. a lot of them is Jay Triano,
mm-hmm.
for what it's worth.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't think they've been horrible at it, but they haven't been good either.
Yeah.
They're kind of somewhere in the middle there in my mind on out of bounds plays. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as far as like letting the games kind of go late, and this has been a problem for the Kings for a long time, but I really go back to, and not to, as a cop-out to Mike Brown again, he did make some wrong moves down the stretch. He should have tried to find a way to have Fox and Sabonis, one of them on the floor at the end of the third, but I mean, it kind of comes back to me to personnel, like stopping these runs, having guys that are able to create stops. They do not have that. Like mm-hmm. they do not have a lineup that you can look at and say, wow, that is a defensive lineup. That's going to be a problem for opposing teams. Yeah. It's always a problem for the Kings because they only have one or two defensive players, mostly Keegan Murray and De'Aaron Fox, that are able to pick up stops on some of these players like DeMar DeRozan, who was going through everybody there tonight. So did Mike Brown make a couple of wrong decisions? Yeah. Is he perfect? No. But, I mean, the Kings were back to this question of when will they make moves to really try and upgrade that part of the roster, because we're looking at a team right now. Since the summer of 2022, it's largely intact.
I have a question for you guys that Doug talking there actually sparked it in my mind, and I haven't really thought about it before, but, you know, I mean, Adrian Griffin kind of aside, like, how often / do you guys think coaches should be fired for regular season? Does that make sense? Like, you know, how, you know, at the end of the day, Mike Brown is here to take this team as far in the playoffs as possible. Realistically, I mean, unless you're just severely underachieving, how much should regular season factor into your job security? Unless you're just flat out not making the playoff. Like, of course, if they get eliminated, if they're the 7 seed, go into the play-in and don't make the playoffs, mm-hmm. I could understand why that would then, you know, potentially lead to some questions, or maybe if that happens next year, Mike Brown might lose his job for it. But it's just tough for me to, you know, I know all these regular season games are tough. It's just 82 games. I just feel like this is not where Mike Brown is asked to make his money.
I feel like it's kind of already treated that way, that the postseason is just what is going to matter to the owners or GMs that are making these decisions, you know, unless you feel like you lose the locker room.
Right.
And the star players don't have your back, right. Then that's its own thing. At that point, you kind of are forced to reset.
Like
in
Milwaukee.
My mind.
Milwaukee.
Exactly.
Or like what they tried to do with Darvin Ham with all the rumors before the deadline.
That was definitely interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that, I think it's already that way. And a lot of what Mike Brown has done is geared up for being better in the postseason, even if that means it's going to be a learning process in the regular season. And, you know, TBD, because it is the same guys we're talking about here, but They also took the Warriors to 7 games and could have been, even though Steph had 50, if they would have got some offensive rebounds and made some free throws.
And the jury's still out. On the 2023-24 season, the jury
that's more where I'm getting out.
Yeah, it's like people – the highs are high and the lows are low. There's peaks and valleys right now, especially when every game has like a heightened level of importance.
Yeah.
Things are going to get even, like, you know, buckle up, folks. It's going to be even worse. Like, if the Kings lose tonight, tomorrow.
Wait for that Dallas back-to-back. I can't wait.
On national TV, too?
Oh, my gosh.
Man, the narrative's going to be crazy. It's going to be a very long couple of weeks, and the jury's still out. The Kings could, you know, we don't know if they've taken a step forward, backwards, or stayed the same this year. We just don't know yet. I think that that's a conversation for later on. But for Mike Brown, I mean, I don't look at any, you know, he is not the bulk of the problem with what's going on with this team right now. I'm not looking at it as a Mike Brown issue. Some were after the loss the other night, and, you know, again, he made some mistakes. He is not going to pitch a perfect game every night, but the jury's still out. We got 22 games to go, and 20 games to go, round 20. Yeah, I mean, we're still in the end game, but the book's still open.
Yeah, you have to perform in the playoffs, or that's where you can make your money, if you will. But what you do in the regular season obviously sets you up for that, right? I mean, you're the seventh seed right now, so you go into the play-in, and if you lose, it's, well, if you had performed better in the regular season, you would have, because here's the thing, let's just put the rat on the table. The expectation isn't
I don't mean to break you up mid-flow.
Put the rat on the table.
All right, go.
You're from New York. You know rats.
You're watching Sopranos right now, Frankie. Come on.
Please continue.
The bottom line
put
is...
Put the rat on the table.
Don't put anything on the table.
The bottom line is the expectations aren't extremely high still.
Yeah.
You had a grace period, and honestly, being that third seed may have changed perspectives, right?
Yeah.
But Mike Brown probably could have just lost in the first round for... I don't think they ask questions on Mike Brown until year four. They could lose in the first round for 3 years straight, including last season. They could lose in the first round this season. They would have to lose in the first round next season for any questions to happen. I think that's where the expectations are. You went 16 years, you know? The problem is... The problem is this play-in, and it's a necessary evil because it's great.
Right.
But on the other side,
it
keeps your hopes alive if you are the Lakers or the Warriors.
Yeah.
But as far as the Kings are concerned, in a couple years ago, you'd be sitting prettier than you are right now, because if you lose that play-in, you're right. You might, and especially if that play-in hopefully isn't the situation, especially if that play-in is not at home, then Vivek's not getting any of that money. You know what I mean? You got to at least have it at home.
Facts.
You got to have a game at home. I'm just saying.
The front office would be in jeopardy before the coaching staff.
I agree.
If this offseason, if it was another year after this, like you're saying, I think the front office would get pointed to before their coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think it's ridiculous for having this conversation. And I know it's not you guys.
No, I got a text in the chamber. I can't wait to read you.
Oh, is that your big spicy?
No. It just came through. Okay. It just came through.
All right.
Well,
Go ahead. Give me anything
else? It's ridiculous to expect Mike Brown to take the exact same players and just make them better.
It's been 2 years. I mean, again, the last major addition to this roster was Malik Monk. I mean, they went out and got Sasha Vezenkov in the offseason. I think that was a very, you know, there's a lot of buzz around that move. He's been hurt. He's not, I'd be surprised if he played again this season. We'll see how that goes, but you never know. But the last really impactful move that was made was Malik Monk signing in July 2022. Yeah. So I agree with Brendan that if they were to somehow go into next year with the roster that's similar or even closely constructed in the same way, I think it's going to be more at the guys in the front office for sure.
And I'd be shocked.
I don't know.
That's probably not going to happen.
I don't know.
They're going to look different next year.
They're going to look very different. But we're not there yet. You still got it. You still got a chance. You still have an opportunity to get into the dance and do what you need to do and want to do. One more segment with the insiders, the Kings insiders for Sacktown Sports, Brendan Nunes and Frank Carticelli. When we get back, spicy text coming through on the text line. We will read that. And the issues with the Kings' offense, are they too one-dimensional? Sal's and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Welcome.
Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube.
Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
One more segment with the Sacktown Sports Kings insiders, Frankie Cardicelli and Brendan Nunez. And here we go, guys. I got to read this one. From the 916.
Have to.
I can't take a team seriously whose star player lets the ball roll up court to delay the clock starting when he has the lead, in all caps. So low IQ. Embarrassing and boneheaded.
You know what's embarrassing and boneheaded? That, I mean, we
are
don't
we
need
really
to say
doing this?
We don't need to say who said that. Like, that was not.
Wait, what?
That's when you're supposed to do that.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That's exactly when you're supposed to do it. Why? What's
the shot clock doesn't move. The game clock does.
That's genius.
That's the way. Remember Ty Lawson with the ball sit there for like 45 seconds?
Yeah.
Let the whole quarter go by.
What's the area code on that?
Please don't be 530.
916.
It's not 530.
Don't be Frankie's hood.
Don't be 530. Right.
916. 916. So maybe they were mistaken. They thought that the clock wouldn't move.
There's bigger problems going on than that, my friend.
Yeah.
They were close. I mean, it's annoying when, because De'Aaron's tried to do that a couple times and got it stolen before. It hasn't happened this season, but it's happened before. Like, that's frustrating, but the actual process of what he's trying to do is
Have you seen the best one?
High IQ.
From LeBron. It's like on those like blooper reels. LeBron let it roll all the way from one side of the floor to the opposing corner. And then finally someone tried to go grab it and he knocked it out with his own hand out of bounds. And then it started running back on defense.
Actually, why don't people just drop the ball? Like, why don't you just put it right in front of the baseline?
Can you do that?
I don't see why not.
Can you reach over the line and put
it? Couldn't reach, but you could probably just
hold it.
Drop like, the ball.
Alvarado hasn't tried it. It hasn't been done.
Yeah. That is a fact, actually.
You might be in a tough spot if somebody tries to come guard you.
Sure, right.
Fox was doing it last game against Caruso, and I was like, Caruso might dive after one.
Right. Scary. Right. And then, so there you go. That was from the 916.
Thanks, Texter.
As we break down what is wrong with the Kings, one thing that we saw, guys, and everyone's favorite Kings fan, Kevin O'Connor, was talking about the small ball situation with Trey Lyles, and where Chris and I landed was you just haven't seen it's they're negative 7.2 as far as that net rating. But to be fair, we just haven't really seen it that much for whatever reason. There's just Sabonis just plays a lot, and you know, you've seen JaVale and Alex Len. So, I mean, he's not wrong. It didn't look great last night or two nights ago. Didn't look great at the beginning in Minnesota, but we were all there in the post-game presser. At the end of the day, Trey Lyles, I mean, good on you for having the players-only meeting, but he got out there, and it was like he had seen a ghost. It was the ghost of three-pointers pass. He didn't want to take a shot.
Yeah, that's what can't happen in that lineup is when you're offensive-focused, space in the floor, five out, then shoot the ball when you're open, you know? And it wasn't just Trey. It was multiple, but Trey had the most, the one that stands out the most, for sure, the most memorable. But defensively, that lineup's not great. Like, and I feel like also this year they've done it very reactionary. I think I've said this before, that like it's against Indiana with Obi Toppin, or like when Dario Saric or even Trayce Jackson-Davis is out there for the Warriors and things like this. Theis on the Clippers, you know. The Minnesota game was the first time I felt like we saw it against a big, like an actual big on the other side. And I thought it worked okay, but I don't know. You're still fully leaning into your offense, and there's going to be high variance on do shots go down or not, because defensively, switching with Trey still is not going to lead to the greatest results.
By the way, you brought up Obi Toppin. I know it's not the summer yet, but I'm hearing.
Is he your second target?
I'm hearing.
Right after Marcus Morris?
Right after Marcus Morris.
Marcus Morris number one, Obi Toppin number two. But we will follow that up in the summer. What do you think, Frankie, about the small ball situation?
I mean, they're kind of out of choices. Again, it comes back to personnel. I mean, it's the best option the Kings really truthfully have as far as, you know, offense and defense. And you're going to find those mismatch scenarios. But, I mean, tonight's another one. The Kings are probably – I would be surprised if down the stretch they don't do the same thing again against the Lakers, who don't really have, like, a true traditional big. I mean, I think AD's playing their five right now. Alex Len's kind of taking him back over that backup center role. But you see in those late-game situations, Mike calls on Trey Lyles because he can bring you that – what we thought he could do in that last couple seconds against Chicago, which take an open three, but I'm not really sure what that was about. I mean, you have to hope there's not a mental thing. Again, I think one of the biggest conversations going on right now about the Kings is is there a mental aspect at play? Is that why the free throw shooting's been a problem? Because there's no answer. Again, it's,
has
it's,
to be.
It's hard because, you know, for people that, you know, are on the air every day or write things every day or report, we don't have the answer to that. That's one that you can't really break down. You can't break down free throw shooting unless you're looking at Giannis, who takes a half an hour to take a free throw.
That's right. Yeah.
But
that's my solution.
There's no easy answer. So there might be some mental things at play with passing up a three-pointer when it's open, or Malik, who's been just one of the best free throw shooters in the NBA over the past couple seasons.
Not this year.
10% drop-off from last year. It's crazy. So Trey Lyles, you know, I think the Kings have faith in him. Obviously, he's been a guy that's been here for a little bit. Feels at home here. I think he's someone that can thrive in a backup center role in a small ball situation. But, you know, passing up an open three was tough to watch the other night.
There's going to be a situation. I'm going to ask you guys the Max Kellerman question. Laser beam pointed at Earth. Aliens coming down. Who you putting at the line?
This might be a crazy.
Let me tell you.
It's Malik.
There's no good answer.
It's Malik.
It has
it's
not.
It since has to be Malik.
My answer was Malik, and I'm telling you, since I said Malik, he has missed more.
Then why would you ask us again if you jinxed it last time?
I was just hoping the insiders, I would think that you guys had different answers.
They just can't make free throws.
Frankie looks like he was going to say something spicy.
I want to know.
He's going to say Alex Len.
Well,
if you really look at it.
For a second, let me point out the fact that I said 10%. I thought I was exaggerating, but Malik Monk has fallen from 89% last year to 80% this season. It's really
awesome.
Insane.
Yeah, we don't have the answers.
But my answer, which I guess is an okay answer, I really just, it was the first name that came to my mind just in recent memory. It's Harrison Barnes.
Allen's
at the free throw line.
He's missed free throws too.
Yeah, but I'm going Harrison. Put a suit on and win the game.
Well, I'm pulling up some games here, and let me see. Harrison Barnes going back. Let's go.
God, he never shoots him this year.
He never shoots him.
This is if you're talking clutch. You're imagining it might be his first free throws of the night. Though.
He's not tainted.
80%. 80% on the year. 80% over whatever sample size. 14 games I pulled up.
It's Harrison Barnes.
It's Harrison or Malik.
And it ain't close.
Here's the crazy thing. Me and Allen were actually talking about this, I think, during the Chicago game. Isn't, in a weird way, the answer is actually Keegan, but the problem is he doesn't get to the line enough to feel any sort of confidence in him going to the line.
It's Keegan or Herter.
It's not Kevin.
It's Atlanta Kevin. I don't know what's up with Sacramento Kevin.
Sacramento Kevin hits different. It quite literally from the free throw line.
Hits the rim different.
It's the rim different. Yeah.
The 3-point shooting's been great, though, at least. I mean, I think he's shooting like 45% for like the last month and a half.
Yeah.
But that actually leads me to a question. I was looking up Kevin Herter's splits because we know how important he was last season. You guys that were boots on the ground last season as well, how was he? Was he taking? Does it feel like he was taking more shots last season? I'm trying to figure out where he was scoring these points. Because last game, for example, he makes 2 threes, I think, in a row, and I don't know that he took enough. It just feels like the flow of the offense. I'm just looking at this, trying to figure out where was he getting his shots last season.
I think it's mainly that Keegan is taking more shots, and Fox is also taking two less shots per game.
Yeah.
So it's just Keegan, I think, taking a little more rather than, you know, anything Kevin's doing differently in my mind.
Yeah.
I kind of think it's as simple as that.
I see it the same way. And the efficiency's come back a little bit. I mean, he's not where he was as far as last year, 48% from the field and 40 from three. He's at 37% from three. But again, that's after just a really bad start. One that saw him play bad on both ends of the floor and fall out of the starting lineup. So it's a defense. Like Kevin's offense, I'm not really worried about it anymore. It's just about how Brendan pointed out he's being targeted right now and making it really tough for the Kings to match up against opponents defensively. It's just he's got to pick it up or they're going to, you know, he's going to find himself on the bench more in late game situations, which he voiced his opinion, doesn't like being on the bench late in games. But when teams are targeting you on switches and you're losing every time, like you're probably going to be on the, you know, the sideline.
Or shoot the lights out and make it so that it's evening it out. All right, before we get you guys out of here real quick, because we're leading right into our dog segment here at 1:30. Give us your dogs for the game tonight.
There you go.
You want me to go first?
Yeah,
go
inspire him.
I'm going to go with Domantas Sabonis, only because I'm just going to feed in a little bit into that to that AD Sabonis rivalry. 8-0 against AD. I think it's I think it's a stupid stat.
Wow.
And a lot goes into it, but I think it'd just be funny to see it keep going because the narratives are hilarious on social media. It's mostly watching Kings and Lakers fans fight over the 8-0 thing. It's just it's entertainment.
Wins are a center stat. That's true.
There's only so many options here, I feel like. I'm going to go with De'Aaron. D'Lo's been playing well. He's not a good defender, even if he's not going to be the primary or whatever they end up going with there. But I think that De'Aaron can go to work, and I think he's going to get back to that mid-range a little bit more tonight.
There you go. Jason Timpf of The Volume said Sacramento speed guards are a very different challenge than the shifty guards OKC brings to the table. It's a bad matchup for the Lakers' backcourt. They need to come out sharp or they will be down big early, and hopefully the Lakers will be down big early. Thank you to my guys, Brandon Nunes, Frankie Cardicelli. What do you got, Frank?
Rats on the table.
Oh, rats are out.
You got the rats on the table.
Rats out.
There you go. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.